So I'm so excited to have you all here. I want to again welcome everyone to this conversation. Actually, with all the cameras, we're filming our first live episode of The Men's Den, which is our first video podcast coming from the Black Men Can. So this will be available on all streaming channels, and we're getting up on YouTube and the Black Men Can website. And so just really excited. I remember watching the show for the first time. It was like, I just felt so seen, so valued, so heard, because content had been made that represented me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what a lot of Black men specifically when they see, like, even when you see Black women, like, oh, this is how we want to see our Black men portrayed. So Deji, if you just start and just tell us about the journey from inception of, like, okay, I want to start and I'm going to write a script about Black men authentically.
Thank you for that question. It's been a long journey. The original pilot for Johnson was written in 2014. It is 2024, I believe. And that just goes to show how long the process is in creating projects in Hollywood, but also for a show that touches on the topics and features, you know, the type of content that we have on our show, how difficult that is to get sold in Hollywood as well. You know, obviously, you know, Black men and Black women, you know, haven't been portrayed fairly in media historically. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, I'm sure we'll dive into some of that. But I wanted to create a show that reflected myself, that reflected the Black men that I knew in my life, my brother, my brothers, my uncles, friends, people around me. Watching television, I didn't really see that on TV. You know, a lot of the shows on TV spoke to, you know, Black men that I didn't truly recognize on a daily basis. You know, a lot of it was fantasy, hyper violent in a lot of ways, unrealistic to real life. So I wanted to make something that was relatable and true, and then inspired. You know, representation inspires, right? So, you know, when you see somebody on TV that looks like you, you feel represented. And when you see them going through similar things that you might go through in life, you are inspired. And I think it's working, because we get a lot of messages and DMs and people just telling us how much the show has helped them to maybe patch things up with somebody who they've been having issues with. Work things out in a divorce, go to therapy. It's all these topics that we touch on the show that has inspired people. So we feel like it's working. But in the beginning, creating the show, there was a little bit of a standstill initially, because it's very difficult to get projects sold in Los Angeles. So I wrote the initial pilot in 2014. And in 2017, a mutual friend introduced Thomas Q. Jones and myself. You know, he was saying, hey, Thomas could be a great person to be an actor on the show. So I met with Thomas. We had some conversations about the show, and it turned out that he was very like-minded. He understood the importance for this type of narrative, this type of content. He knew it was a lack of it on television. And so he said, I don't want to just be an actor on the show. I also want to be an executive producer and help you get this made. So he was like, what do you need? I said, I need some money. You know what I'm saying? I need some money. And that's one of the hardest things to get in the industry as well, is somebody to finance your project. So I invested in myself, and Thomas wrote the other half of the check to produce the independent pilot that we shot. Because it's hard to get people to read in this town. Nobody wants to read in this town. You got to show them what you want them to see. And especially a project like this, where Hollywood is so used to showcasing Black men as one-dimensional, they weren't necessarily, or aren't in general, necessarily interested in showing complex characters. You know, showing the reason why we do the things that we do is like, okay, let's just throw him in this character. He's a prop for this, or, you know, he's this role. But who are we really? Who are we? So it was tough. But we produced the independent pilot, and it got in the hands of Cedric the Entertainer. And we found, after, you know, a few years of shopping it around in 2020, we found a great home over at Bounce TV,
yeah,
who allowed us to make the type of show that we wanted to make. It's a network, So there's advertisers and there's commercials. So of course there's gonna be some limitations on what you can and can't show on television. But for the most part, you know, the storylines and the characters, you know, we had a lot of creative control over crafting that. And you know, I can truly say that there's nothing like it on television.
Powerful, wow. I mean,
that's a very powerful story there. And so I want to hand it to Thomas and tell us about that meeting, right? I watched a lot of the clips, so I know a little bit of the story of how you two met. But I can share with everyone how he became to be. And then when you read heard what he was working on, read the script and was like, this is it. This, I need to be not just an actor, but I want to be a producer. I want to be a showrunner with you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when I met Deji, I was at the point in my career, short career at that point, where I was like, man, I'm tired of getting told no. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I played football for a long time, played in the NFL 12 years, which is a very one-dimensional world. You're not exposed to that much. I mean, it's X's and O's, it's wins and losses, and that's it. And then when you retire, your rest of your life is you're a former NFL player. That's it, on top of being a black man. So. At that point, I had been acting when I met Deji in 2017. I had been acting maybe 3 years. Not a long time, but I've been able to book some pretty significant roles. And I really, really fell in love with acting because it gave me an opportunity to really evolve as a person and kind of get away from being just a black athlete. And so meeting Deji and discussing Johnson, it was like the perfect timing for me to pursue producing. And also producing a narrative that will allow me to speak to being a black man first versus a black athlete. Because as a black athlete, that's how they see you, as a black athlete, you know, not even as a black man or a black human most of the time, just to be honest. So once we met, like he said, like-minded, had the same grind as me, the same hustle as me, the same grit as me, and he also looked at things from a different perspective. He wasn't ready to just take it and have it blow up now. He understood it takes time to make something that's gonna be timeless. And we shot the pilot, prepared to go the long haul, and it was a long haul. You know, we shot it in 2017. We're all excited. We're like, hey man, this is gonna be on Netflix next week. And next thing you know, 2 years go by, we're like, man, this ain't on Netflix yet. Yeah. You know, so, you know, we bumped into a few people along the way that liked the pilot, but they just didn't believe in the narrative. They were like, it looks really great, it's shot great, high production value, great acting, but I don't think people really want to see four black men that aren't in the streets or aren't gangster or aren't misogynistic or aren't, you know, egotistical or you know, all about money. And this is coming from networks. This is coming from people that look like us that are taking it to the networks, and that's what they're saying. And even some of the black people at the networks are saying that. So it wasn't just an uphill battle for us. It was almost an impossible situation, because if you think about Johnson and what the show is made of, and the narratives and the storylines, you know, you've never really seen a TV series like this. You've seen movies, you know, maybe The Brothers, The Wood, but those are one-offs, you know, and they become classics because it's a one-time thing. Okay, here you go, we'll give you the one movie. Okay, that's enough. Versus, you know, 3-4 seasons to actually see these black men grow and evolve and you know, be accountable and also be flawed, and it's okay. Once Cedric the Entertainer and Eric Rohn, once they saw the pilot, they were like, hey, it was perfect for them because they were trying to produce content outside of what Cedric was doing, and it just was a match made in heaven. So took it to Bounce TV. Bounce is a great network. You know, they specifically put content out for us to enjoy. But in the bigger spectrum of Hollywood, when you think of streamers, Netflix, Hulu, you think of HBO, you know, you think bigger platforms, you know, you have more bandwidth, more people are able to watch and be able to get the logistics that they're looking for to make the money back. What we loved about Bounce is that Bounce said, and David Hudson, we have to shout David Hudson out, who is the vice president of original programming that took the chance on this show.
Yeah.
They allowed me and Deji to say, hey, be black men. Be four different black men, but be authentic. And also let black women be authentic to black men. There were no agendas with this show. There were no social media power structure conversations there. And if they were, you know, for the most part in the writing, it was satire, almost to make fun of what people do on social media, because this is a real show. We talk about real stuff on this show, real circumstances, real issues that people watch and they see themselves. And that's what we plan to make, is something that people can see themselves, especially black men, because usually you don't see us as even human most of the time. And even if we aren't human, or even if we are doing things that are negative, there's no reason why. It's just a surface, this guy's a killer, he's a drug dealer, he's misogynistic, he's a pimp. There's no reason why. Why is he like that? Why is he a drug dealer? How did he become a drug dealer? How did he become a pimp? And what we do on this show is we try to give backstory and depth to these characters. And Bounce TV was the perfect place. If it would have gone anywhere else, we would not have been able to make the show. And if we wouldn't have been able to make the show that we made, we wouldn't be here right now talking about it. So,
yeah.
And that's really evident when you watch the show. I mean, when you see the characters and the topics. And so I want to get into some of those topics. I thought the first one we should do, because it is 2024, and that means it's what, that's an election year. So there's episodes where we get into politics from later on when you start, somebody wants to run for office, right? And then even just the conversation of four black men, and somebody's like, I don't really vote. And the other person's like, hey, I want to vote. So talk to us about putting these serious topics, but specifically on the voting and having that dialogue of four different viewpoints of black men on voting.
Yeah, I think that's the point of the show, is to offer different perspectives, you know, very strategic in creating the show. Understanding that, you know, there is a divide even in our community when it comes to entertainment and absorbing entertainment and how we feel about it. We knew that there was an audience for this show, but even when we first came out in season one, you know, it got a lot of praise. We broke a lot of records on the network. We broke it was the most viewed half hour show in history on Bounce when it came out, with 2.1 million viewers. But there were still some people who didn't understand the show. You know, everybody here, I'm assuming, has seen the show or has heard of the show. And there are still people who, I guess, they're more attracted to the more salacious sort of material. They're more attracted to, you know, showcasing us in a different light. They feel like that is what entertainment is. And when you start bringing up topics such as politics, when you start bringing up topics, we talk about divorce, spanking your children, you know, all of these different topics, going to therapy, molestation as well comes up on the show. For a demographic of people, it was very hard for them to digest that and understand that, you know, we're trying to show you something different than what you're accustomed to. But as the seasons progress, season two and season three, people started to get it. And it's been an incredible response, especially after, you know, it's on Hulu now as well. So now people can go to Bounce as well. They can watch it on Hulu, and the response is absolutely incredible. But specifically to the narrative of politics, yes, you know, one of the characters, which is my character, Greg, he doesn't vote. He doesn't want anything to do with politics. He feels like it's a waste of time, as a lot of us do, you know, and people are entitled, you know, to feel how they feel. On the flip side, you have other characters, specifically Jarvis on the show, who does vote, who does see the neighborhood changing, does understand how important it is to have your voice heard. And so, you know, that's one of many topics. We wanted to dive into that and just showcase the difference and offer different perspectives and viewpoints, in case there's anybody who hasn't heard the other side, who doesn't know why it's important to vote. And, you know, maybe they don't have people in their lives who they have these types of conversations with. So they see it on television and they can form a more educated opinion. Or if you don't, vote and you feel like politics isn't for you and you don't want anything to do with it, okay, here's somebody who you can you can relate to. And who knows, maybe this character develops over time to understand that there is something important about that, you know, especially on the local level within our neighborhood.
Absolutely, and you see the growth. Well, first, maybe there's just by show of hand, who has seen the show, who watches the show, like to get a show of hand. All right, so we have some who haven't seen the show. Mm-hmm. So actually, can we start to share a little bit about your characters on the show and who they are so that people can know who, when we start talking about, because I have questions that are gonna tie back to just being your specific character and how that elevates Black men in media. So how about just telling people who you are on the show and what your characters are about?
So there's four characters on the show. There's a Greg Johnson, played by myself. There's Omar Johnson, played by Thomas. Mm-hmm. There is Keith Johnson, played by Philip Smithy. And there is Jarvis Johnson, played by Derrick Brady. And the point of these characters was to try to find different essences of Black men, right? That represented the vast majority of us. Obviously, we're not gonna represent every single Black man. But if we can represent the vast majority of us that we don't see on TV on a regular basis, I felt like we would have a hit on our hands, something that people can relate to, something that's familiar. When you see the characters, you can either relate to one of them or you can relate to all of them. And most people relate to a piece of all of these characters. And so I wanted to make them vastly different. This is a conversation that Thomas and I had. You have to lean into some of the stereotypes initially, right? Because you want to later on take those stereotypes and flip them on their heads. I mean, these are things that people assume about Black men. So we made one, myself, Greg, who's kind of a late bloomer, somebody who isn't motivated, somebody who doesn't keep a steady job or a career. He has mainly odd jobs. He's in and out of relationships. You know, we've seen those types of characters on television, but like Thomas said earlier, what's the reason for that? You know, how did he get to that point? Who broke his heart before that makes him a little scared to commit? We have Keith, who is more of a quirky character. He's, you know, considered somebody who you might not in real life think would hang out with a character like Thomas's character, but they're really good friends. He's very smart. He's cool in his own way, a little different. He's in love in season one with an Instagram model, right? But yeah, some things happened in season one with Thomas's character. We won't get into that. But
see, man, you got him shouting at me for the back of the room, bro.
I'll pass the mic so you can explain that in a minute.
I'll explain myself when I get the mic.
Yeah. But he's a unique character. He's somebody a lot of people write in and say he's one of their favorite characters on the show. And women say that they would love to have a Keith in their life because he's honest and he's hardworking, he's funny. And then you have Jarvis. Jarvis is the most economically sound when it comes to us. He has his own company, employees, and he, in season one, he's married to a white woman. He's, you know, right-leaning when it comes to politics. But it's great that we're all friends because we can all play off of each other and offer different perspectives on all of these topics. So we wanted to make them as drastically different as possible. And then we have Omar. I'll pass the mic on that for the fourth character. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
So Omar is, he's married. He has a son with his wife. But, you know, he's a little aggressive sometimes. He's kind of, I guess they would call him alpha. And he's very flawed. But as you get to know Omar, you get to peel back the layers and you get to understand why he's this way. And all four of these characters, like Deji said, have a purpose. Because Black men usually are considered monolithic, you know. A guy like me is gonna hang out with guys like me. You know, a guy like Keith Johnson is going to hang out with guys like Keith Johnson. When at the end of the day, we as Black men have very similar experiences, just in comes in different forms. Which is the coolest part about this show is that the last name Johnson is synonymous for the Black male experience collectively. That's why all of us have the same last name Johnson. It ties us together. But Omar's character represents a lot of Black men who, you know, feel like they are not given an opportunity to you know, have rights to their kids, and somehow sometimes the court system doesn't work well for these guys. You know, the stereotype is deadbeat daddy and this and that, and you know, Omar loves his wife, he loves his child, he's fighting for those. That's what matters most to him, because typically you don't see that. You know, the narrative is always the guy that's not there for his kids or not there for his family. But what about the black men who are? What about the black men who are suffering because they love their wife, they love their kids, and they can't see them? So it's a very complex show with very complex characters. And all of the characters are honest. Even the black women characters, they're very honest. No one's wrong. You know, we take the time to show why they make the decisions that they make. And I think sometimes in Hollywood, sometimes black creatives get a little lazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't do the development work to make these characters truly relatable. And, you know, art imitates life. Life imitates art, however it goes. I don't know. I think I have it on my Instagram. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But either way, people watch these shows and they say, hey, I'm just like her. But sometimes they don't understand why they're just like her. And in the black community, it's important for us to understand why. The whys are important in the black community, because we're in such a position to where, you know, we have to fight every day, that collectively we have to be on the same page. And that starts with understanding why we're in this situation and then how we're going to get out of it. And we take that overall idea and we put that into these characters and into the show. So these characters are very, very dynamic and complex in their own way. And you know, it's just cool to see all four black men, you know, have different essences of it together like this.
Also too, you know, one of the biggest compliments we get on the show is that the show feels very balanced. Yes, right. it's a show that follows four black men, but it showcases black women's perspective just as evenly. Like Thomas was saying, nobody's wrong. This isn't a show where you sit around and watch black men complain all day about, you know, their lives and their relationships. It's a show where you see them trying to figure it out, trying to work towards some sort of resolution, trying to grow, fighting for his wife all three seasons, fighting for black love, you know, showcasing that. That's very important to us.
Yeah.
We could have easily went down some other roads and made things, you know, probably a lot more salacious, but we didn't want to fall into the trap of, you know, just everybody, you know, cheating on each other and, you know, all the things that we've seen, you know, on television so many times. So we just try to peel back the layers and dive a little bit deeper with the nuances of these characters.
Hey, absolutely. I mean, that's what I got. I mean, I finished the show on the weekend. So hopefully those who haven't tuned in yet, you'll do that this weekend and you'll tap in with Johnson. And so I think about the complexity of the characters, and what I really see is what I like to call is a comprehensive black man, right? So you see the full range of what it means of masculinity. So if, just for both of you, share a moment in the storyline that you believe in any character, just on film in the show, that you feel was pivotal in addressing the theme of masculinity, and you saw that it really resonated with viewers.
So many. I mean, brotherhood is a huge part of this show. The love between these four men, you know, what is masculinity? I think, you know, in today's world, that term gets a bad rap, you know, to the masses. You know, it's looked at by a lot of people as negative, and I think it's a very positive trait and attribute. It's something that, you know, to me, masculinity it means a lot of positive things. You know, protecting. You know, being there for your family, you know, being there for your kids, and showcasing or teaching them a road to follow that, you know, on how to deal with the world and a lot of the issues that comes to them in the world. But we flip it on its head. I mean, people look at masculinity and think it's all about just being strong, and it's also, you can be masculine and be vulnerable.
Right.
You know, and these characters are very vulnerable. They need each other. They're there for each other. You know, I don't, you know, there's a lot of moments. There's one in particular that stands out at the end of season two with Omar's character. There's a lot with Omar's character. Omar is, Omar has probably cried the most on the show, more than any other character on the show, you know, if you want to keep it real. But, we're there for him, and he's not afraid to go there. I know every time he sees a strip, he's like, man, we're going there again. I'm like, yeah, we're going there again. Because you don't expect that from somebody like Thomas. And I want to stretch all of our actors and have them kind of flip these stereotypes, you know, on the heads, you know. So there's at the end of season two, you realize that Omar has gone through a pretty traumatic experience in his life when he was a kid, which is partially the reason for the way that he kind of deals with stress sometimes and confrontation. And it's a very traumatic experience that he opens up to his friends, and they're there for him. And that's a big part of the show, the brotherhood, the masculinity, him being able to be vulnerable and show emotional intelligence on the show. Yeah.
I mean, the show is masculine on the surface just because it's four black leads, men. So you immediately get the energy between the guys, you get the banter between the guys. In season one, in the pilot episode, we're having a conversation around the pool table, and that's probably as raw as you're gonna get as how guys really talk, mm-hmm. You know? So I just think, you know, in regards to masculinity, you know, the masculinity is all throughout the show because, you know, humans in general have masculine energy and feminine energy, you know. It's the same thing with the black women on the show. And you see a lot of some of their masculine energy shine through as well in feminine energy. You see how they collide between the men and the women. To me, it's just a perfect balance of masculine and feminine energy when it comes to the relationships with the guys, when it comes to the relationships with their significant others. You see the men providing for the women, you see the women providing for the men. It's just a very balanced show, and Deji and I take pride in that. When we watch this, you know, I'm home sometimes, I'll just turn it on and watch it again and just kind of take the creative mind away from it and watch it as though I'm just someone that never heard about it. I'm like, whoa, all these dynamics are so complex, but they're simple at the same time. And that's what I like about it. It's so different. It's not the typical masculine energy that you would get from a certain type of show that you're used to seeing. And it's important to have a show like this because, you know, if you have one-dimensional black men, one-dimensional black women all the time, you know, it just dilutes your culture too, because that's not how we are. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm just, like I said, I'm just proud of the balance, you know, of the show when you watch it, because as a black man, I can watch this show and I can listen to a black woman, I can be like, damn, she's right. Mm-hmm. I can be like, bro, you gotta do better. And
we challenge each other to do better on the show.
Yeah, we challenge each other. And in real life, you might not have that opinion. You might be like, hey, I'm pro men. I'm pro black man. Yeah. But no, when you sit here and you watch this show, either by yourself or with your significant other, and you see the scenario, you're like, you're looking at yourself. If somebody's like Omar, and Omar is screwing up, not only are they looking at me saying, damn, Omar, you gotta do better, they're watching Keith, Jarvis, and Greg say, Omar, you gotta do better. Mm-hmm. So we're holding each other accountable as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch the show, each episode, it really just, you're like, again, you feel so seen as a black man. I know I did. I mean, there was an episode, I'm like, every episode, there's something that happened, something that's said, and I start thinking about my own friends and my own mm-hmm. groups and the conversations that I have the car rides and stuff in it, because this is me, this is us.
Right.
And so what a popular saying that we have now is a black men deserve to grow old, right? And part of that is really tied to our self-care. There's actually an episode titled Self-Care and during the season. So want to tell us what's a self-care routine that you just had personally, and then why prioritizing self-care and seeing that in the show is important.
Mm-hmm. Probably my hair, and I don't have a haircut right now, so this is the wrong time to be bringing this up. Probably, you know, my hair. You know, I like to get a fresh haircut weekly, unless I'm just kind of, you know, spaced out and creative. And you know, sometimes when you're creative, you're not even thinking about that. But that's Omar on the show too. You know, Booney at Barber is a great barber. You know, I'm like, Booney, Omar got to be crispy, you know, on the show. So I probably shaved my head for the most part.
I think for me, it's just moving, getting outside. You know, I lived in LA up until a few days ago. We came to New York. We're going to be here for a few months and then going down to Atlanta. But in LA, everybody is outdoors. We hike. We hit the Cobra City stairs. Try to eat as best as we can. You know, I was pescatarian for 5 years and started eating chicken again. But, you know, very particular about, you know, my diet and what I eat. And also, you know, just trying to get as much cardio as possible. So, yeah, we have one episode, I think, in season 3 that's entitled Self-Care, where Omar does yoga, you know, with Keith's character. These are all the little things that, like, Keith, you know, you would expect from Keith, but you wouldn't expect from Omar. So needless to say, for somebody as physical as Thomas looks, it's on the show, he says it's the hardest thing that he's ever done is like downward dog. So, yeah.
And so thinking about the characters and relationships, dating, marriage is a very thing that's thread through the entire 3 seasons. Talk about your individual character, because you each have different dating stories and relationship stories, but how does your character's relationship in terms of marriage or dating reflect like broader societal issues and norms?
I mean, you know, if you look at social media, you know, you would think that like, we're in like World War III, you know, it's a huge, huge issue between black men and black women. But in reality, I don't necessarily see that to be true on a daily basis. You know, I see black men married to black women every single day, you know, the vast majority of black men. And that's not to say that that's how it should be. You can find love wherever you find love, you know, but it's like a war zone on social media. And I think, you know, the younger generation, you know, looks at that and probably holds it to a high regard when, in my opinion, it's just not reality, you know? So yeah, we try to reflect what reality is on the show. Of course, it's TV, so you have to embellish a little bit and, you know, make it entertaining. And so you kind of have these dating woes that the guys are going through, relationship issues and drama. And I think that's why we paired up Jarvis, you know, with a white woman in season 1, is so we can kind of talk about that dynamic. They had some issues in their relationship, very hard to navigate culturally, especially with some of the things that Jarvis went through. She wasn't able to understand. Right. That could happen in real life, or it may not happen in real life, but that was his experience, you know. So we just try to be true to experiences that I've personally experienced with writing the characters, things that we talk about, things that we see. Maybe try to take stereotypes and just flip them, you know, start it as a stereotype and then flip it on its head. But yeah, I think we do a pretty decent job at working to reflect reality on the show outside of the entertainment aspect that we have to add into the show.
Yeah, all the characters are true to life in some perspective. And Omar character, for me, it's been an honor to play this character. You know, I know, you know, marriage sometimes doesn't work out. You know, certain times people just aren't meant to be together, or they fall out of love, or whatever the situation is. But, you know, I guess the deadbeat dad narrative is pretty strong in our community. And, you know, a lot of black men are labeled as deadbeat dads, sometimes without people really understanding some of the circumstances. I don't have any deadbeat dad friends. If you're a deadbeat dad, you can't be my friend. You know, you can't be around me. Mm-hmm. We don't have deadbeat friends. We don't have deadbeat dad. We don't, that's not who we are. I don't even have anything in common with somebody that doesn't take care of the kids. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know how to even communicate with you or connect with you.
It would be awkward.
Yeah, I don't, you know, because I would have no respect for you whatsoever. And so for me to play the character, I can really be 10 toes down for the fathers who are there for their kids, who want to be for their kids, but they can't be for their kids, for the fathers who get caught in the court system or just the pettiness of a breakup or a divorce. I've gotten so many DMs from so many black men over the last four seasons of, man, your character Omar, man, thank you, or just fist emojis. One guy, he DM'd me and said he waited at a park for 2 hours to see his daughter. His ex was supposed to bring his daughter. She didn't show up. He called and couldn't get in contact with her, and he found out like a week later that she had moved. Wow. His daughter was two years old. And so he DM'd me and was just, he wasn't thanking me, he was triggered because of some of Omar's situations. So, you know, I'm just honored to play this character because I feel like I can give a voice to certain men who might not necessarily be able to say it either on social media or out loud, because you're going to immediately be muzzled based off of just the narrative that's out there. And there's a lot of Black women out here that understand what that narrative is. They have brothers going through that, cousins, uncles, you know, and it's just really like tough to see that. It's tough. And it's also tough for Black women to have a deadbeat dad. You know, I have relatives that have, you know, deadbeat daddies. And it's tough to raise a child on your own. It's tough to get them up every morning, get them to go to school and clothe them and feed them and still keep a piece of yourself as a woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just a tough dynamic across the board. And I think Black women, and Deji and I say this all the time, have done an incredible job of representing themselves, creating the content to showcase themselves how they want to be seen, whether it's girlfriends, insecure, living single, multiple shows where Black women are like, hey, listen, this is our truth.
Yeah.
This is our honest truth, grounded truth. This is our life, whether you like it or not. This is what it is. And I don't think enough Black men have done that, because I do think if we have enough balance between the two, then at least in Hollywood and at least in this creative space, you can start to see Black women and Black men, how close we are and how much in common we do have. So again, I'm just honored to play the Omar character because I definitely think I give a voice to a lot of really good Black men that aren't necessarily getting a fair shake.
That's real.
Yeah. For those who didn't have your hand raised, I hope that tonight you're going to go watch that first episode because you're moved by the conversation. I want to ask, I remember I was watching it, and so then I see him like Quintessential Gentleman. I'm like, oh, I know these guys. We actually have like a whole monthly call that we do.
Yeah.
And so for some other stuff that we're working on. And so just there, like even that decision, right? Because like you could have made your own magazine and it could have been in the show, but you're like, you took the time to find a magazine focused on promoting positive images of Black men and say, hey, take part in the show, be on the show, let's use this as the as a part of the show. Yeah. So tell us just about that decision, you know, because you didn't have to, but you did. And yeah, that is what Johnson is all about to begin with in terms of the brotherhood.
Johnson is all about authenticity, and we want the show to be as authentic and true to life as possible. So every single episode, every character, Thomas and I are always having conversations trying to figure out how we can reflect a brand or a person or somebody who people can recognize that this is true to what they see on a regular basis. So you talk about Quintessential Gentlemen. First and foremost, let me shout out Quintessential Gentlemen, the entire crew over there, Eric, you know. This is one of the first publications and brands that really embraced our show, that really saw true value in what we were trying to do. And, you know, we've had a great relationship and great synergy since the very beginning in season one. It's been very fruitful for both of us, and it's authentic and it's organic. It's not them wanting something from us or us wanting something from them. It's just us recognizing what they're doing, respecting it, and the same is true for them, and our relationship is just going to continue to grow. So when the opportunity came to feature a publication in the magazine, Quintessential was the first one that we thought about, called Eric, and he was like, absolutely, you know, absolutely. So shout out to Eric. And you know, it doesn't stop there. You know, we featured Angela Yee on the show, who was interviewing Jarvis when he was going through what he was going through in season one. Kendra G is going to be in season four. Oh, by the way, season four was just announced this morning. Season four comes out. Thank you. Season 4 comes out August 3rd. Kendra G is going to be on there. And it's a lot of moments like that on the show, in addition to highlighting really dope black musical artists who in the city of Atlanta and beyond, if they can get to Atlanta, because, you know, we can't be flying them in. So they got to get there. But they have the opportunity to come on the show and perform, you know, perform. We've had Kenyon Dixon. We've had Jade Nova. We've had Samo, which if you watch and you pick up on all the little things, Samo, really, really talented artist. His voice has become synonymous with the show, because he's closed out every season. In the season finale of every season, he's been the music that you've heard at the end. And, you know, we're going to keep that going as well. It's kind of a artistic choice. But, yeah, that's our thing, is authenticity. So, quintessential, all the artists on the show, and any characters that we can find. You know, even King Harris, you know, T.I.'s son, you know, was on the show as well, playing somebody who was similar to himself, and I think he did a phenomenal job, you know, portraying that character as well. So,
And we also, you know, we pay homage to the people who opened the doors for us. You know, Cedric the Entertainer. Shout out to Cedric the Entertainer and Eric Rowan at Birdbear Entertainment. They saw the pilot and immediately were like, "Hey, this show makes sense. It fits our brand. It fits what we've been committed to for the last 30 years they've been in the business." And so they gave us the opportunity and opened doors for us. And on the show, we make it an effort to cast our black male legends, actors. You know, whether it's Earthquake, whether it's Rodney Perry, D.L. Hughley, T.C. Carson, right? You know, we cast him for season 3 of Johnson, and he'll be on season 4. And, you know, he's a legend. He's a legendary actor. And he's so humble, but he was also taken aback because he had never really been treated the way we treated him on set. And we were a little confused as to how he was kind of receiving the treatment. You know, he was getting the royal treatment. Hey, you know, you're right. You need this, you need that. You're a legendary actor. You know what I'm saying? And we respect you. And when he rapped, one of the biggest compliments that Deji and I could have ever gotten was, he was emotional, he started crying. He said, "Man, I've never been made to feel like a star in this business." And that was so moving to me, because we're like, come on, man. We, you know, you're a legendary actor. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But
paved the way.
But it just goes to show you, you know, when you give people their respect, you get their respect in return. And we have a lot of black crew members, you know, but we specifically hire a lot of black men crew members because we're also mentors to those guys, you know, watching how Deji and I work, being on time, being accountable, understanding that, you know, if you want something, you have to work for it, working as a team, because this show is just bigger than just the show, you know, it's the idea, right? The idea of Johnson is what Deji and I signed up for when we put our money together and shot the pilot. And we have multiple black men on our shows that we give cameo roles. We have multiple black men on our shows that are artists, and we put their music on. Mm-hmm. You know, our goal is to take what we created and pass it to the younger black men and say, "Hey, you guys go create it. And then when you make it, you pull the other ones up." Because black women are doing that. Black women are doing that. And we got to catch up. Mm-hmm. We got to catch up. We got to catch up to where black women are in this business. So, you know, the idea of having the legends on the show and also being able to work with them and having something that's timeless like Johnson with Earthquake and T.C. Carson and Greg Allen Williams, always saying Anthony, my name. But, you know, we have so many people, D.L. Hughley, Cedric the Entertainer, as many black legendary comedians and actors as we can put on the show, we do. Because once this series is done, you know, we want people to look back at this whole piece of work and be like, "Yo, they had as many black male legends as possible." And also two women, Terry J. Vaughn is in it. You know, Cedric gets a little jealous of Deji because, you know, she's playing his love interest. And he's like, "Yo, you know, that's gonna always be my girlfriend, my wife, whatever." Yeah. But no, it's just great to be able to kind of give back to the talent that's paved the way for us on the show.
And expanding upon just behind the scenes, you know, just really making it about helping especially the younger generation. There was a time we were on set, we were filming apartment complex slash hotel area, and we were filming long day. We were outdoors and we saw a young black girl. She was probably about 10 years old, and her little brother, who might've been a little bit younger, seven or eight years old. We saw them sitting about maybe, 100, 200 feet away on the curb, just watching us. And, we get that all the time when we're shooting outdoors, but they were there for hours. They were there for like 2 hours and they just wouldn't leave. You know, Thomas pulled me aside. I was like, yo, you see them? I'm like, yeah. He was like, man, we should invite them over. You know, if they're going to sit there and watch, maybe we can plant a seed, maybe there's interest. Who knows what she can do? Who knows what he can do? So Thomas went and got him, brought him over. We told the director to get up out the chair, and we sat them down in the director's chair behind the monitor, gave them headphones, and they sat there the entire day and watched all the footage as it was being shot. And the reason why it's kind of a big deal is because it was during COVID and we weren't supposed to do that. We took that chance. We were outdoors, had masks on and stuff. But those are the kind of things that we look to do because, the same way people open the doors for us, we want to open the doors as well. And it's not just about the content on this show. It's about what this show represents and living it in real life. Yeah,
the show is already on my Mount Rushmore of TV shows, ever created. So, this conversation has been great. I have cards here, so I could ask you lots of questions, but we have an amazing audience here. Many people who have seen the show, so I know that there's probably questions that people have for you. So I want to turn it over, and I'll come around with the mic, and we would love to hear for those in the room who have questions just from this conversation or from you watching the show and questions that you have for Thomas and Deji.
Thank you, gentlemen. The story about mental health and therapy, what was your intention behind that?
There's several intentions. I think the first obvious intention behind it is to show that it's okay, right? It started in season one. It's very tricky kind of writing some of this content, because we have such different perspectives. And so the dialogue in season one was talking about how in our community, number one, growing up, we couldn't afford it. That was looked at as a luxury as opposed to a necessity, right, for our community. Or just the stigma behind it, being labeled as somebody who has to go and get therapy or take care of your mental health. Now it's becoming a lot more widely accepted, but for a lot of us growing up, it wasn't. If our friends knew that was the case, then we would be made fun of. The other one is the religious aspect of the vast majority of us lean more on religion than seeking out a professional within that space. And another aspect was the fact that there's not a lot of us within that space on the other end of the desk who we can relate to. I think it's all about relatability, right? You go and you talk to somebody about your issues and your problems. You want somebody who can relate and who understands and who can give you sound advice from a real world perspective. And so those are all the things that, we kind of touched on in season one, and we just continued the conversation in season two and in season three as well, more specifically with Omar's character, but also with Greg's character. Greg makes a comment in season three where he says, it's a trend. Everybody don't need that, and a lot of people feel like that too. Yes, mental health is very important, but there is a case to be made that, are we overcompensating? Are some things not within that world? And, just sort of working it out with your friends or talking to somebody like that would be enough as opposed to going to seek a professional. So these are all different things, and nobody's wrong. These are all different things that we wanted to at least bring the light, spark the conversation. And that's what this show is a conversation starter, hopefully within many households to offer a different perspective. Good.
Yeah. Hi there, I'm in the back. Fan of the show.
Thank you.
Congratulations, season four.
Thank you so much.
I heard you talk a lot about the journey from when you wrote it to when you did the pilot to when it got picked up. Long time. Can you talk about some of the missteps or things you would do differently? And I know people say, you know, the adversity makes you stronger, but if you were to do this again, or for creatives like myself in the room who look at your journey as a road, as a roadmap, are there things you would have done differently or other missteps or what have you along that line? And Thomas, feel free to chime in as well if you want to share.
That's a tough question. Because, you know, everything in hindsight obviously is a little bit clearer. You know, there's small things that, you know, we could have done differently, maybe to speed the process along. Man, I really want to answer that question. I don't want to give the stereotypical answer of like, no, we're everything, you know. So what could we have done differently on the process?
If you were to do this again,
yeah,
do it the exact same way you did it this time.
That's Yeah. If we were to do it again, I 1,000% would do it the exact same way. I think it was necessary for this type of show. We do have other shows that we're pitching and creating, and the path is a lot different because they're different shows, different type of content. Maybe it's a lot more attractive to a particular network, is not as, you know, deemed as controversial, I guess, in a lot of ways. But for this show, I think it really set the foundation for myself as a writer. You know, it was very tough. You know, I've seen the scripts change. I've seen notes that have come in from people who have read the script, and we had to make a decision on if we wanted to accept those notes or not. You know, one thing that we don't have in this business is an ego. So if somebody, you know, Thomas has an idea and I think it's a better idea than what I have, we're going with that idea. And that's any sort of network executive, anybody like that. But we did want to remain true to what the show was, including the casting. We casted this project in our original pilot. And as we started shopping it, there were conversations about casting somebody else for this role or bringing somebody else in. And one thing Thomas and I said was, we're not going to make this show unless the original cast that we had in our independent pilot is on the show. And every single person that you see on the show was in the original pilot that we shot in 2017. And that's very rare in this business, damn near impossible, you know, but Bounce gave us that opportunity. And so I think that's a representation of kind of how we move forward, because we did have some interest during those couple of years, but we didn't want to change certain things and we didn't want to change the cast. And they were very obviously appreciative of that. And I don't think anybody else could have played any of these characters better than who's cast on the show. I can't see anybody. A lot of times it's political, you know, but I always say this to creatives. You have to find enjoyment and fulfillment in your work at the level that it's at, right? You can't look for validation from a network. You can't look for validation from streaming numbers or money or anything like that. People have asked me, how do you measure success? And I think it's from what Thomas talked about, is the messages that we get. I get messages every 15 minutes from people, long paragraphs about the show. That's success to me. The fact that we did it the way we wanted to do it is success. To me, it's not about the big numbers, even though the show is continuing to grow. We're very blessed by that. I would have been happy if this was a stage play and we performed it and people came and saw it live on its feet. It didn't have to be a television show as long as we got the message out there. So I don't measure success by, you know, Hollywood standards. I measure it by how many people, you know, we touch, you know, with the art, you know, so, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for doing this. Brandon, what up? I just flew in all the way from LA, so just got to show love. But naturally, my question is, over the last couple of years, we've seen our community find ways to embrace each other, whether that's through like podcasts, music, and even the globalizations of sports, right? We've seen like the NFL commercial in Ghana. So my question to you guys is, how do you guys plan or look towards incorporating the diaspora in some of your future storylines, and how we can continue to build those bridges so we can come together as one community instead of isolated pieces as we are right now?
Respect for that. Yeah. That's really big, and that's a very interesting time that timing that you asked that question. Several ways. Number one, we have the earthquake character on the show who's always shouting out Nigeria on the show. You know, he talks about going back to the motherland. He talks about the food that he loves to eat. Just bringing that awareness to people watching this show, I think, is a very small start. But I think bigger than that, in season four, we had the opportunity to film two episodes in the Bahamas. So specifically on the show, we were able to branch out a little bit outside of the U.S. And, you know, showcase some truly authentic Bahamian flavor, culture. You know, we have a Bahamian director for those two episodes. And, you know, obviously a little limited with this one particular project, you know, is very difficult for budgetary reasons to like really truly go outside of that. But in general, we do have projects, you know, on our slate that, you know, include Jamaica, that include parts of Africa, that includes, we have great relationships with some great storytellers from London as well that we've been talking to about potential projects. We understand the importance of that, the need for that. And that's definitely on our radar for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you see the show, you'll see, like Deji said, the earthquake conversations. You know, there's a funny conversation between Earthquake and D.L. Hughley's character, Eugene, and Booker, where, you know, Eugene is questioning his, Earthquake's African, what is it, ancestry.
Yeah.
And you know, it's comical, but at the same time it's real, it's honest. The Bahamas episodes, I mean, I cannot wait for you all to see season four and see these two episodes. They're so authentic to the Bahamas. We filmed it Atlantis was really, really excited to have us there. But they were excited to have us there because when they saw us filming and they read some of the scripts, they saw how authentic the episodes were. We weren't just using it as an opportunity to say, hey, we're in the Bahamas and we're going to show the commercial side. I mean, we got in the trenches. You know, there's some stuff that Deji looked up and I'm like, whoa. Some of the places we filmed, you know, one of the places we filmed was a pier where the first slaves were brought to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And they have
wooden statues
of slaves. And one of the slaves, only one of the slave statues is facing back towards Africa. I mean, it's, you know, so we go really deep in regards to just the concepts on this show because people can sniff out surface ideas from a mile away. And being having the diaspora be a part of Johnson, hopefully if we can continue to get more seasons, will definitely be something to look forward to in the future.
So question, two-part question. One is the intentionality of the setting being present day. You could have told this story in the 80s and the 90s, black men. I want to know why was it so intentional to have the setting be during this time where it's relatable, at least us having this conversation and things that's going on. And then the last part is, do you have an ending in mind already?
Good luck, Deji. Glad I'm not the creator for that question.
Oh, man. Well, let's break it down. So period pieces are expensive, right? They're expensive. It's very difficult to get a film or TV show made that's set in the 80s or the 90s because you're dealing with wardrobe, you're dealing with vehicles, houses, set design, all of that. And, you know, budgets, TV budgets aren't like they used to be. You know, and so we have to make sure that we put as much money on the screen in a smart way. But I think bigger than that, having it be present day just allows us to tackle social issues as they arise, you know, in our community. You know, we do take an opportunity to within the writing reflect certain topics that are, you know, that are being discussed in our community, or obviously history repeats itself, so a lot of things in the 90s are still happening today. So, but there are new things that arise that allows us to discuss that on the show. As far as an ending, yes. I think creatively you have to already have where the characters are going at a certain point. Maybe in season one, you don't necessarily have to have that information in your mind. But as you get into like a season three and a season four, knowing the life of TV shows, knowing that most TV shows don't get past the season two or three, we're fortunate enough we're at season four, which is a very long run. Some of the shows that are classics have five seasons, four seasons. So you have to start thinking about how to make sure that the audience is fulfilled when they finish watching whatever the final season is gonna be. Sometimes that is, up to you and your responsibility. Sometimes it's out of your hands because, you know, politically, there's certain things that you can't really control that happens at all networks, you know, across the board, you know? So, season four is coming, but we do, I think, creatively have ideas of what the ending could be. And if it goes beyond that, then we're prepared to extend that with new and fresh content in between. So, yeah.
Thomas, my question is specifically for you. Well, first off, I got to give you flowers and kudos for transitioning from that former NFL player space, because I know that's tough when you're ready to like just put it down, right? Yeah. But my question for you, I mean, even when I think about it, before I even ask my question, I mean, I can think of Jim Brown, Carl Weathers, maybe Terry Crews, or somebody that looks like us,
right,
that are in this space and being successful at it. There's others that try but are consistent. You know, we've seen you in other projects. That being said, do you see yourself, in a sense, being a pioneer for Black men who are in that realm, you know, transitioning over and showing that they can do more beyond the athlete moniker? And how much of that goes into what you do when you design your character for this show?
All right. Well, thank you for the compliment, man. I appreciate that. It's very hard to transition, man. You know, especially when you played for a long time and you played for major markets, and I was blessed and fortunate enough to have a solid career. And I have a brother that played, it looks just like me, so they think he's me, you know, so I can't escape being a football player sometimes. But when I retired and I was like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna pursue this, the first thing I did was change my stage name to Thomas Q. Jones and add the middle initial, because I individually need to believe that I'm a different person too. And initially, you know, I was a little bit kind of like, is this corny? Is this, you know, because you see a lot of people do that. You know, you see so many people, you know, Prince went by Prince and then he was just the symbol. And, you know, and if you're not in this space, you don't really understand why people do that. But I completely understood it at that point, because I was so tired of just being a Black football player, because I never was just a Black football player. You know, I grew up in a household where football was secondary, you know, being an A and B student, being a good person, all those things were first. I went to the University of Virginia with my girl Claudine in here, there she goes, wahoo, wah. Went to UVA and I graduated in 3 years and I played football. But I didn't see myself as just a football player. It was like, that's just something that I love and something that I'm able to do well. But I realized after 12 years in the NFL, now you're a Black football player for the rest of your life. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. But I'm more than that. And we are more than that. We're more than Black athletes that can just run and jump. We're more than Black rappers that can just rap and sing. That's fine, but we can do so many more things. And unfortunately, the other talented Black people and Black men don't get as much of an opportunity to have the light shine on them as athletes. And so we get kind of put in this box. So, you know, once I met Deji, that was when I really felt like, okay, not just as an actor playing typical roles. I'm, you know, B. Mary Jane, I was a football player. You know, Straight Outta Compton, I was a menacing, my character's name was Large Man. I didn't even have a real name on my IMDb. It's like, you know, I was playing a large man in Straight Outta Compton. But with Johnson, I was able to play a father, a black man that looks like me, you know, works out, dark skin, tattoos. Yeah, and he has a technology company, and he's ambitious in tech, and he wants to run his own company, and owns his own company, and it's not, you know, one of the stereotypical situations. So I think not only am I trying my best to be a pioneer for other athletes to realize they can do other things outside of football, but also to recognize that they are other things outside of football. And I think that's worked because there's so many guys that DM me and reach out to me and they see what I'm doing and they're like, how? And I help every one of them as much as I can because it's important. We're not monolithic, you know what I'm saying? Sports and entertainment are an incredible sector for us to be a part of. And we pretty much, whatever we focus on, we somehow end up being at the top of it. That's just the reality. So I just advocate for expanding to other entities outside of just the stereotypical ones. And Johnson is also in the entertainment industry, but the brand of it, the idea of it, is to showcase black men that are not what you'd expect them to be.
And let's not discount how hard this guy works.
That's the part that he didn't mention. He works harder than anybody I've ever met. I thought I worked hard. He works hard. He doesn't sleep ever. He's always, you know, texting me, emailing me ideas, articles. You know, it's crazy. You know, there was one time we were editing the independent pilot. We were at my apartment in LA, and I was editing. I was on the keys. He was on the couch behind me, and I think this was the first moment I noticed that, you know, I had somebody who was really going to match my energy in terms of work ethic. So I'm editing, it's like maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, when is he gonna go home? When the hell is he gonna go home? He's like, hey man, try this over here, man. If you cut to the close-up, you know what I'm saying, and then cut back to the wide shot, it might work better. I'm like, okay. And I do it, and he has really great ideas and sensibilities when it comes to story and all of that, which I didn't expect that. I'll be honest, when I first met him, I didn't expect for him to have a level of knowledge that he has, storytelling, editing, directing, producing, even though he's not an editor, he understands all aspects of the industry. So I was like, look, man, it's 3 o'clock in my mind. I'm like, I'm gonna just take a little break. I told Thomas I'll be right back. I'm gonna just go to the room real quick, maybe grab some water, be back in a few minutes. I went in the room and I laid down. I was so tired. And I woke up at like 7 a.m., walked back into the room, and he was still there waiting. 4 hours later, you know what I mean? So, so that's, you know, it hard work beats anything, right? You transition from one arena to the next arena. If you work hard at it, you know, you can accomplish anything. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who understand that, and there's a lot of people who are kind of scared of the work that it truly takes in any field, any industry. All of this is hard work when you see somebody successful in what they're doing. A lot of people want instant gratification. They want to be there now. They want to skip the line, but it doesn't work like that. It definitely hasn't worked like that for us, so, yeah.
Okay, question. Good evening, gentlemen. This question is for Mr. LeRae. So, in part, I came in late, so I don't know if you answered this question before, but I took a little wander off over to the NAACP site, found a profile of yours. And I was reading where you talked about you had a passion for mentoring inner city youth. And earlier it was mentioned that you guys gave a young person back in 2020 the opportunity just to see what goes on behind the scenes, essentially planting a seed. So my question for you, and also for you, who planted that seed for you? And if you could go back to that younger version of yourself, let's say anywhere between 13 and 16, what advice would you give him?
It's a great question. I have a very specific answer for that. So coming up, you know, when I was 9 years old in Atlanta, I auditioned for a youth theater group called YEA, Youth Ensemble of Atlanta. Very famous in Atlanta in terms of the theater world. The director of that theater group, his name is Freddie Hendricks. Everybody in Atlanta knows Freddie. And he ran that. I went into the audition, I was nervous, and he poured into me and took me outside and gave me a pep talk. And I went back into the room and I killed it. And I became a part of this very well-respected theater group of about maybe 20 kids age. I was the youngest. It was maybe 8 to 19. And we sang and we danced and we did plays and we traveled around the Southeast. And it was a huge part of nurturing my talent as a performer. And so going back to the authenticity of the show, in season 4, there is a storyline for a little kid. And we're serious about mentoring, right? So in the show, there's a storyline about a little kid who wants to go to Tri-Cities High School in Atlanta. And in real life, Freddie Hendricks teaches the drama program at Tri-Cities in real life. So I said, yo, Thomas, I want to make this as true to life as possible. He said, let's do it. So what I did was my character, Greg, mentors this kid. He lives outside of the district of Tri-Cities, but he really wants to go there because he wants to be in drama and theater and sing and dance. He doesn't want to hang out with the neighborhood kids. He feels like he's a little different. So Greg is tasked with going and trying to get him into the school, even though he doesn't live in the district. So long story short, I called up Freddie, got him on board, and he's actually playing himself in season 4, and he just came full circle at Tri-Cities High School. And I had the opportunity to also go to Tri-Cities and mentor and talk to the kids, give them inspiration, motivation, answer their questions, and build a bond with them as well. And that's something I want to continue to do and be more active at. Also, Big Brother, Big Sister is prevalent in season 3. They return in season 4. We have a partnership with them. Bounce TV has a partnership with them, and so they're featured on our show. And I want to do more work with them as well. So that's very important to me. Yeah.
Can we give them both a round of applause?
Thank you for their time.
We're coming to a close of the conversation. One, thank you so much for taking the time to come. This started from a DM on Instagram. The show, I reached out, and I think you had sent a message even earlier, and I was like, hey, so this is fire. This is exactly the Black Man King. What we promote, this is the show. And they responded. We've done like Zoom calls and stuff like that. And they told me about the press run in New York City. I said, and I called Jeff. I called Gil. I'm like, hey, listen, we can do a thing. Just is like that. So I just want to say thank you to like just sharing. Like, you didn't have to tell me you were doing a press run. I'm like, oh, we're going to be in New York City. I'm like, I got you. We're going
to
take care of this.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I want to say thank you to Brandon as well. I want to say thank you to the Black Man Can. This is a brand that I've been following for a long time now. I'm a fan. I'm a supporter. Separate from the show, even before we were doing the show, like I've known about you guys for a long time. You guys do amazing work. You guys are building something very special over there. Definitely, it mirrors a lot of the direction we're going on the show. So it's great that we're able to do this. But the fact that you you reached out, you watched the show in what, one weekend?
Yeah.
And called us, man. We jumped on some Zoom calls. Thank you so much for supporting us. And we got to continue to support the Black Man Can and guys like Quintessential. Because you have the audience, you have the filmmakers and the projects, but who's in between is the journalists, the publications, the brands, who brings us to you. Without you, we wouldn't be here speaking to you. You're the connective tissue. And so just like you guys are supporting our show and we're so grateful, we got to continue to support these guys and show up to everything that they're doing. It's very, very important, or else the message gets lost, because it's very difficult, especially with our type of content, to get on some of these other major platforms to promote, our content. So thank you, bro. Yeah.
Just kind of piggyback what Deji said. I've been a fan of the Black Man Can page for a long time and your brand for a long time. I was super excited when Deji was like, yo, guess who hit me? I'm like, who, Black Meg, what? Yeah. You know, like I was excited because I'm like, man, you know, sometimes it's a lonely, you know, journey, man. You know, as Black men in this business, when you're trying to do things the right way, or you're trying to do things the righteous way, or the honorable way, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's like a lonely, lonely path because a lot of times the powers that be don't want to invest in that. You know what I'm saying? So to see other brands, Black men champion what we're doing and connect the dots, and then we connect with you, we connect with Quintessential Gentlemen, you just start to be encouraged and realize, wow, you're not the only one that cares about us and cares about our narrative and cares about the good Black men out here, the Black men that are protecting and loving our Black women and our Black children. And also too, just want to thank everybody that's here, you know, really means a lot to us for you all to come out here. You didn't have to. That's one thing about this business. People don't realize, people don't have to like your stuff. They don't have to like it. And what we're making isn't what you would typically see, you know? We get multiple comments about the content, you know, and some of it initially is, oh, I don't know, I'm having a hard time. And by the end, they're like, I just watched all three seasons. And it just shows you, like, man, you know, us being us is good enough. Yeah. You just got to give us a chance. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You just got to give us a chance. So we appreciate everybody that came out and all the kind words and the compliments and the support. It means a lot. You know, season 4 is a great season. It premieres August 3rd on Bounce TV, and seasons 1, 2, and 3 are on Hulu. So if you haven't checked it out, I would love for you all to check it out. And then with Deji and I, we respond to social media. We love the feedback, good, bad, and different. You know, you never know what somebody's thinking unless they tell you. And there's no egos over here. You know, we can always take, and that's to the young lady in the back, her question about what would you do different. I wouldn't do anything different just because we felt like we did what we had to do. The one thing I'm proud of that we did do is we listened to everybody, even if we didn't agree. We listened and we took, and I learned that from him because I wasn't like that at first, to be honest. You know, somebody give us a note and I'm like, whoa, you know, that don't make any sense. But I learned that from Deji. It's like, hey, listen, there may be something in there that you can take. And now that we're on the same page with that, we take every piece of information and we use it as ammunition as we move forward. So that's something that I would take with me as a creative as we move forward. But thank you again. Thank you, Brandon. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Give another round of applause. Thank you again. I want to give a shout out to Anthony Edwards, Tarkin Samuel, No Guru-ish for the production and the setup to film everything. Again, the episode is going to be available. Again, this week we're actually launching The Men's Den, which is our video podcast. So we're going to be putting this out there, putting these conversations and having more conversations like it. Thank you again to all the partners who made it all happen, Gildia. Jeff, Eric, I'm just so grateful and thankful. So again, thank you again, and that'll be our time.
Thank you.